On today's edition of Grape Encounters Radio, we will take you where no wine show has ever dared to go before. Here's a little taste of what's to come.
Colonel Sanders, you got nothing on Quaddy. Nothing, I tell you. How many herbs and spices are on your vermouth?
A number.
11?
A number.
More?
More.
More. Colonel Sanders is turning over in his grave right now. That's going, it. Hey, what pairs with Kentucky Fried Chicken?
And now from our Central Coast Wine Country studio in the quaint, friendly, and historic town of Atascadero, California, it's time to enjoy an hour of the really good stuff on Grape Encounters Radio. Heck, we may even uncork a bottle or two of wine while we're at it. Here's David Wilson.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
All right, and it is time for your weekly grape encounter. And if you were with me last week, you know I had on a very special guest. We had on Michael Blaylock. He is the director of winemaking for Quaddy Winery in Madera, California. You may not know the name Quaddy necessarily, but as we talk about some of the wines that they make, you'll definitely know them because they're all over the United States. But the conversation that we had last week was a teaser to the conversation that we're going to really have for the entire show today. We were talking about vermouth. And we're actually going to get into some other aperitif wines as well, because that's what Quaddy does so incredibly well. But first, I want to welcome Michael.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
It was so much fun. You and I were up at Wine Song in Mendocino. And for the life of me, I have no idea what you were doing there.
Well, no, come on. I know you're up there tasting some great wines and everything.
Yeah, but I mean, it was mostly Mendocino, Napa, and Sonoma wineries there, and you're like way down south from there.
It's like an eight-hour drive or something. Yeah. It's a goodly distance. What? It's a good crowd, though. I mean.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
We've done it for almost 20 years or something, however long it's been on.
Is that so you're grandfathered in?
Almost.
Wow. I think that might be one of the very best events of its kind.
It's excellent. And I don't know if you saw it just the other day. They said the auction garnered an unbelievable lot of money this year. So it was for a great cause for the hospital foundation.
Yeah, they told me that they hit very close to $1 million.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Great response.
But anyway, I was so happy to run into you there. And then, of course, we talked on the phone last week on the show. And I decided that I was going to make the what should have been 2-hour trek to Madera that ended up being a 4-hour trek instead.
It's a pilgrimage.
That's
the way to say it.
You know what? There are times when I just got to say this. I'll probably get sued for it. Google, you lie. You lie. It's like, don't tell me that's the shortest route. I got behind more tractors and people going slow.
You said a lot of road work or something?
And road
also?
Work and all kinds of stuff. For the people who don't really know where Madera is, which would pretty much be almost 100% of the universe, right?
Yeah.
You're out in the middle of nowhere. This is the...
We like to call this God's country, though. Come on. This is...
Well, it's all God's country. I think he's taking it back. You know,
the slogan for Madera is that we're the heart of California. And so we are actually the geographical center of the state of California.
Yeah.
So if you keep that in mind, we're, you know, equal distance from the coast to the mountains and then equal distance from Oregon to the Mexican border.
Oh, I see. So going both directions.
Both directions. We're the geographical center.
So how did it come to pass that maybe the finest vermouth maker in the country is located in this area? Because I know a lot of grapes are grown here.
Right.
But they tend to be grapes grown for bulk wines.
A lot of it is blending.
Blending. But the Via label that you have is just so stunning.
It's beautiful, too. Yeah.
Really stunning. Yeah.
I used to actually, when you talk of packaging, I mean, we can talk about the wine in a minute, but the packaging itself, you know, is one of the aspects that a winemaker or a wine producer is always looking to have grab you, because on the shelf, that's the first thing that people see.
Yeah.
So it better grab you right away.
And this label is stunning.
It is.
By the way.
We started out with the idea that we wanted a tall, tapered bottle, and we wanted a label that would fit on it with kind of a V shape, you know, kind of reiterating the Via with a V character on that. And so that's what we did. It's like a very nice kind of a die cut label. And
so why Via?
That's a good question. There's no real reason for it, except that it was something to do with life. I mean, thinking of via and life and vitality and all those kind of things that go with it. I certainly think with all those herbs that we put in it, that certainly lends to some vitality.
You know, the
aspects.
Minute you say herbs, yeah. About half my audience's ears perk up.
I know.
for reasons other than vermouth. No, I'm kidding. So you've got the via brand.
Right.
And then Quaddy itself makes a number of really high profile dessert wines. And I kind of hate that term dessert wine, by the way.
You're right. No, I've noticed in about the last 10 years or so that when you say dessert wine, especially like if we're at a tasting, like at the Wine Song event, if I say dessert wine, it automatically turns people off right away.
Right.
And so what I've started doing instead is saying sweet wine. Would you like to try a sweet wine? People like sweet wines. And they're finally starting to accept it in the public. It's not just, oh, no, I only drink dry wines. They really like sweet wines. So when I say that, it's a lot better than saying dessert. Dessert puts you in one category after the meal. And that's really not what I want.
It's an interesting dichotomy because, first of all, every state in America makes wine.
Right.
Most of those states make sweet wine.
They sure do.
And California, Washington, Oregon, you know, Utah, Arizona, more of the western states, I should definitely include Texas in there, are making drier wines, but the vast majority do make sweet wines. But sweet is sometimes equated to cheap. And I don't like the term cheap unless it's a really good wine that I got for cheap.
Exactly. That's a value wine.
And what's very interesting is how screwed up we are in this country, because if you go to Germany, the sweeter the wine, the more expensive the wine is.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I think there was a big change just after Prohibition. The whole United States, if you look back and look at some of the older menus, say at the turn of the century and stuff, it was only sweet wines that were available in restaurants. You had a sweet wine with your savory dish, with the main course. There was no such thing as a real dry wine. People didn't drink dry wines. They drank sweet or sweeter wines. And then after Prohibition, that was one of the big changes that happened. And the other one was probably in the late 60s, early 70s, with the advent of all the wines coming out of Napa Valley. Beautiful wines, but the whole change started right then.
A major shock to the consumer system.
Oh, yeah.
But one that stuck, I might add.
It stuck, I think, because of, like I said, the Prohibition kind of got people off of wine. So this new start with dry wines was very acceptable.
I'm sitting at the Quaddy Winery in Michael Blaylock, the director of winemaking's office right now, just got a tour of this fascinating facility. They specialize, really, can I say you specialize in sweet wines? And
sweet,
you don't
aperitif.
Call them port, you call them starboard.
Oh, right. Oh, that's
which is very clever.
Our port style wine, right.
I think probably 95 out of 100 people would look at that bottle and maybe not get it, and then maybe wake up chuckling in the middle of the night, perhaps.
I get that. And that when that light goes off, when someone sees
the
name on there, it's just awesome. It really is.
So the emphasis here is sweet, and we're going to talk more about vermouth, and about half your vermouth is sweet and half is not, because you've got a very sweet, you've got a very dry, and you've got one in between, right?
Exactly. There's two that are on the drier side, and then we have the sweet vermouth, which is the Italian style. And there's two styles of vermouth. The Italian style is usually the red sweet style, and the French style usually the white and dry style.
So let's talk about the other sweet wines for a moment,
sure.
And we are going to actually talk more about them in general during the show, but I want to mention them so that people go, oh, yeah, because
right.
They're going to recognize some of these names. So you have the Electra Moscato.
Electra Moscato.
And Moscato. God, what happened? In the past couple of years, it's just been like Moscato heaven.
It's been an explosion. It's great one.
Have you been stunned by the Moscato craze? Because you were on the shelves selling Moscato way before anybody else.
We were selling the Electra years before anybody got into the Moscato craze. I mean, certainly the Moscato craze in Europe has gone full circle many, many times. But here in the United States, we were on surfing on the front of that wave way before it started.
Yeah. And then you've got that in white. You've got it in red, right?
Right. That's the red Electra.
So how does a Moscato become red?
I'm using two different grapes in that. The first one, the Electra, I'm using the orange Muscat grape pretty much by itself, a little Muscat Canelli also blended in.
Yeah.
And then on the red one that you're talking about, I've added some black Muscat grape. Now, the black Muscat variety is the only Muscat variety with a black skin. So there's some that are red and pink colors like that. But black Muscat, it's a jet black color, and that lends the flavor and color.
And then really quickly, because we've got to take a break, but the Essencia orange Muscat.
Yeah, the Essencia, that was our first one.
Yeah, that's a huge wine.
We sell that all over the world. That's international.
So you make roughly how many cases of that, would you say?
Oh, it's not a lot. 5,000, 7,000, something like that.
But it's a lot for aperitif or dessert wine, right?
It is.
Do you like either of those words? Probably not, right?
I like aperitif, but for this particular one, if you say sweet dessert wine, you're okay.
Let's just call it yummy wine.
There we
okay?
go.
And then there's the Elysium Black Muscat.
That's also
well.
A dessert style or sweet style.
Okay, yeah. We're going to take a quick break. It's sitting at the Quadi Winery. So glad to finally get a chance to sit down with Michael Blaylock. He is the director of winemaking here. You know their wines. You definitely know their wines as you're listening to these very important commercials coming up next. You know, just Google Electra Moscato or Essentia Orange Muscat. You'll recognize the bottles instantly. You've seen them. You've probably consumed them. You're probably glad I got Michael on right now. And we're going to talk about those wines. But more importantly, we're going to talk vermouth for a while when we come back with Grape Encounters. Fair enough, Michael?
Oh, it sounds great.
All right, awesome. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters. I got to grab some vodka. Actually, you don't need vodka to drink vermouth. What am I saying? We'll be back right after this. This segment of Grape Encounters is brought to you by SOMCON 2016, the ultimate educational and informational event for wine professionals and serious enthusiasts, taking place November 16th through the 19th in San Diego, California. Get more information at SOMCONUSA.com. Don't ask me how I am, 'cause I only speak the truth. And you don't want to
Welcome back to America's number one wine radio show, Grape Encounters with David Wilson.
And this week, Grape Encounters coming to you from the Quadi Winery. They are responsible for some of the best known aperitif dessert wines, sherry, and most importantly, today anyway, vermouth, a very misunderstood alcoholic beverage. I'm sitting in the office of Michael Blaylock, the director of winemaking here. The guy's a genius. Genius, I tell you. You're going to hear some forklifts in the background because the guys are working out there. The ladies and gentlemen are working out there, right?
Yeah, we're going full bore right now.
Where are we in terms of harvest?
Here, we're almost done. Yeah, we'll be pulling in two more port vineyards, grapes that we get from Amador County, actually. They're going to show up on Friday and first thing next week.
So explain this to me.
Yeah.
I run into Adam Lazar,
yeah,
who's a winemaking genius. And
there's the two of us.
There's the two of you, right. And I asked him last night at a City Lauper concert, of all things, okay?
Geez, that's great.
And he's like a heavy metal guy, right? And I said, what are you doing here? You should be like right in the middle of harvest. And he said, well, I am. And I said, are you almost done? And he said, we got 2% in.
Oh, man.
2%?
Oh, my God.
Why is he so far behind you? Now, I mean, he's got grapes, Napa, Sonoma,
yeah,
you know, Central Coast, et cetera. What's the difference?
Oh, climate.
Climate,
yeah.
Things just ripen really fast here.
They do. We had an early bud break this year. We had an early onset of the grape flowers. So everything we knew was going to be early. And it turned out about 2 weeks early. So, you know, you put that to extension, then we're going to finish two weeks early also.
So tell me this. I have been reading crop reports from Napa. I have been talking to winemakers on the Central Coast and other parts of the country as well. 2016 might be, just from what I'm reading, one of the greatest wine years of all time. True or false?
True.
Well,
I'm not going to say anything else.
No, don't say it. No, but seriously,
the reason I'm saying true is all of the aspects for a great year are there. Like I said, the early season, slow season like it was, early bud break and everything else, there wasn't a lot of pressure on insects or any disease on the vines. We didn't have any rains. We didn't have anything like that. Everything looked good. So right now we're just seeing if those grapes did, in fact, prove up.
Last year was a disaster. I mean, it was disastrous. A lot of people didn't even harvest their grapes.
Yeah.
It was so bad. I don't think the verdict is out on certainly the red wines yet. We don't know.
Right.
You know, in fact, nobody's saying anything.
Yeah.
But I certainly have heard so many people say that the flavors in this year, 2016, are just remarkable.
I think they're fantastic. And it's really unusual, too, when you get, especially in this area in the San Joaquin Valley, when you get 3 and 4 years of what you would call a bumper crop looking great, pretty soon you're always worried that the vine has stressed itself a little too far.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing it. It's fantastic.
Stressed for success.
Yeah, there it is.
All right. So let's talk about the vermouth, which oddly enough, vermouth on your label is very small and aperitif is large. That was not something that was on my radar until you actually pointed it out, but it was very much on my mind that vermouth is something that we think is supposed to be a key ingredient in a martini, but in reality, this is a wine. And yes, it's a wine. It's not a spirit.
Right.
It's a wine that really was designed to stand on its own. And all it does is make vodka look good.
I would tend to agree 100% with that, David.
Okay, well, you're the winemaker, right? Not the vodka maker.
Exactly.
So what is the deal? Can we do a little vermouth history here?
Sure.
And why is it that we seldom even speak of vermouth? I mean, it's like you go to the market, you toil over the vodka.
Yeah.
There's like 500 different vodkas out there. You toil, you sweat, you get on the phone, you call your significant other, you go, you know, Grey Goose or whatever, Tito's, but nobody says anything about the vermouth.
It's pretty rare. Even when you go to a really good bar, wherever you, you know, you go for your watering hole, when you ask for a martini, you have to actually ask that they put a goodly amount of vermouth in it. Otherwise, you get vodka or gin chilled in a glass, maybe shaken, maybe not, on ice or not, and that's it. That's not a martini. I mean, just because you put it in a martini glass doesn't mean it's a martini.
And the funny thing is that vodka is a neutral spirit.
It is.
The thing that's driving the ship is the vermouth.
In a martini, the vermouth is the complement to whatever vodka or gin that you're using.
Why does somebody go out and buy a $40 bottle of vodka and a $2 bottle of vermouth?
I think it's crazy.
Makes no sense to me.
No sense at all. No sense at all. Well, I mean, at least they're trying, you know, some vermouth in their vodka to make that martini. But as you said, why you would spend just a couple of bucks on it and not pay attention to it at all is beyond me. I know that for a long time, everybody thought about vermouth as that bottle that your grandmother or somebody had way back on the dusty shelf, and it sat there forever. And that was it. Nobody ever talked about it.
Terrible, by the way.
Yeah, right? It is a white wine, and you should handle it just as you would any of your other white wines. Once it's open, put it in the fridge, just as you would with the other white wines, and it'll last quite a bit longer.
Seems to me that vermouth is the second cousin to triple sec.
It is. It complements your cocktail. It should be a synergy going on there.
But your vermouths are made to be the centerpiece of the cocktail. Am I correct?
Oh, there's no question. I mean,
I'm not granted, smoking
your No. But don't get me wrong. I mean, if you're spending that much time about figuring out which vodka you want or your gin, I say more power to you. I'm just hoping you also spend that much time thinking about the vermouth that is the integral component of a martini. That's the whole deal.
So ever since I saw you up in Mendocino, you sent me some bottles of vermouth, three bottles. And I really appreciate that, by the way, because I was broke.
That's cool.
But you sent me three bottles of vermouth. I have yet to pour any vodka into the vermouth. I've been sipping the vermouth. I don't even understand why I need vodka. It's so delicious. And I don't think a lot of people know what vermouth is. Yeah. They certainly confuse it, right, as a spirit.
Oh, all the time. That's one of the first things I say.
So we're gonna take a little break. When we come back, would you be kind enough to...
Let's go through it a bit.
Let's do an exorcism and... Let's dispel the rumors of this being a spirit.
Let's do it.
It was kind of a joke. There was really loose. I think I should have worked on it a little bit.
Well, the exorcism. The exorcism.
Fly. No, the exorcism.
I don't have to explain it. I got it. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So we're going to do that. Vermouth Explained. It's our longest segment coming up next. And Vermouth Explained by really maybe the planet's vermouth expert, bar none. Well, I'm giving you that title. Okay?
You got to put Andy Quaddy in here somewhere.
Andy is the owner here.
He is.
And I'm sorry he's not here.
Yeah,
but
he wanted to be.
I don't think he would have poured as much free wine. So
probably
I don't know.
Not.
Last time I saw Andy, he poured me some of your Deviants.
Oh, yeah.
And, which has got aphrodisiac qualities.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to kiss me, honestly. So I don't really want to see Andy. I'm just joking. Anyway, we are at Quaddy Winery talking to Michael Blaylock, director of winemaking here. And we'll be back. And you're going to know more about vermouth in the next like 10 or 12 minutes than you have learned in an entire lifetime, because I got the guy here.
More than you ever wanted to know.
His boss isn't here right at the moment, so you're the guy.
That's it.
You're the director of winemaking, Michael.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, so you can speak on his behalf.
There it is.
All right, we'll be back with more Grape Encounters right after this.
Don't forget to join our Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page, where incredibly fun people just like you share ideas, and frequently get together to share a bottle as well.
Let's get you out of those wet clothes and into a dry martini.
This segment of Grape Encounters is presented by the incomparable wines of Cardella Winery, a favorite of everyone here at Grape Encounters. Purely delicious, purely amazing. Learn more at CardellaWinery.com. Back with Grape Encounters Radio, and sitting in the office of Michael Blaylock, the director of winemaking for Quaddy Winery in Madera, California. They make the best vermouth. I'm talking crazy, amazing vermouth. There are two things that I want you to know about vermouth, and then I'm going to turn it back over to Michael. The first thing is this. If you're going to go out and spend $30, $40 for a bottle of vodka, right?
Right, or your gin.
Why would you go buy that $2 vermouth that is just miserable and ruin your vodka?
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of, Michael?
What?
It reminds me of somebody whose wine has turned.
Yeah.
They opened up a bottle of red and they left it on the sink counter for 4 days. Now the wine's turned. So what do they do with it? They cook with
it. They cook with it.
Are you nuts?
It's insane.
It turned to poison. Oh, and you're going to cook. Did you think that that wine was going to magically go, oh, I'm better now. Okay. I'm going to make a really good stew for you. No, you're going to ruin the stew with it. And you're going to ruin your good vodka. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing is skip the vodka. You know what? I'm not a spirit fan.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll drink spirits once in a while. But I don't need spirits. I don't need 40% alcohol in my blood.
Right.
Because I can drink a lot more wine.
Yeah.
And enjoy that a whole lot more. Skip the vodka. Skip it. The vermouth is going to be very satisfying if you buy a good vermouth. You don't need vodka. Now, you mix your vodka and vermouth like 50-50, right?
Sometimes that much.
That's no, like I'm sorry. Old, that's Andy.
Andy does.
Andy, right. Yeah. Okay. So Andy, you're more like 5-1.
Yeah, about 5-1 or something like that. 3-1 in that range, you know. But I do like a good proportion of vermouth in there. And again, I think I'd mentioned before, what you're making is a cocktail. If you want chilled vodka or chilled gin, have it that way. Don't call it a martini, though. I mean, you're making a cocktail. A martini should have a goodly portion of vermouth.
So when you go into a wine retailer, and we've got people listening all over the country, so some people go into a packaged goods store, some go to a grocery store, some go to, you know, some kind of wine chain, whatever, or an independent wine shop. What kind of shelf space is vermouth getting these days? Honestly.
It's still pretty small, but I've got to say that it is increasing. A couple of the larger liquor chains have decided that they want to move up. So if you'll see that they've moved it up from the bottom shelf, where it usually always was, up to the second of the bottom shelf.
And the bottles down there are dusty, too.
Oh, yeah, they usually were. So now they actually dust them now, and they're actually promoting it. So it's moving up. There's no question about it. People are starting to become interested. They're very interested.
But do you see a day where vermouth is going to be return to its rightful throne as one of the really great wine-based aperitifs? Because, I mean, really, it's an art. And I really want you to take a moment to explain what vermouth really is. But
sure.
But first answer that question, which is it going to come back to a position of prominence?
I don't think it will ever get to where I would like it to be. But I do think it is.
But you've never been on this show before either.
No, I haven't. So
we're going to change. The whole world's going to change after
everything,
this.
Everything. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel it. It's going up the back of my spine now. I can tell.
So how do we get the guys over at, you know, Wine Enthusiast and Wine Spectator, these kinds of publications, and the editors of some of the big newspapers that have wine sections? What's it going to take to get these people to recognize that this is one of the greatest wines in terms of creativity?
I think one of the first things is that people have to start talking about it and drinking the vermouth.
Okay, so we're talking about it and we're drinking it.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so
things like your show right now, this is what does it. This is what drives the rest of the country.
Were you stunned when I asked you to do this show? I mean, honestly, because vermouth, I mean, a whole show on vermouth.
We had talked before, and I was really pleasantly surprised when you said, let's do a whole show on it. I thought, holy Toledo. I mean, this guy's awesome. So I
think you're awesome too.
Yeah.
But your vermouth is really super awesome.
Yeah.
So let's talk vermouth.
Sure.
What the dickens is it?
Well,
what's in it? you know, what kind of wine is it made from? Why are those flavors in there? Why yeah. is some vermouth sweet and other vermouth dry?
There's
it's all on you, Michael.
No, they're good questions too. And I think one of the problems that we still have with vermouth, certainly here in the United States, is that people don't know what it is. They don't know what to expect, or what they do expect is totally wrong. It's something that's left over from a preconceived idea, or sometime they had a really bad vermouth that was some cheap stuff that nobody wants to talk about anymore. But vermouth, you've got to remember, is a wine. First and foremost, it's a wine. And to that wine, you've added some herbs, different kinds of herbs and botanicals. That's the whole deal right there. Now it becomes the whole purview of the winemaker and the winery. What types of wines they want to use, and what herbs do they want to put into this vermouth? The government declares the name vermouth for the TTB, which is the governing agency for wineries, is that vermouth should have all the characters that a vermouth has. And that's their definition. It's a circular definition.
What does vermouth mean? What is the word vermouth
mean? It's a German. It came from German, a German word, vermouth. And that is referring to the wormwood plant. Was one of the herbs that was always used in vermouth.
Wait, hold on a second.
Sure.
Vermouth, the word vermouth is a German word that has to do with a wormwood plant?
Correct. Yeah, right.
There is not a single person listening to this other than a few Master Psalms who have nothing to do today. There's not a single person out of the millions listening to this that knew that.
Yeah.
Does anybody know that? Raise your hands out there.
Hey, look, there's two.
No, there's not. Yeah, there's two Master Psalms out there. That is it. Right. The rest are going. Right.
Well, no, okay. It's
wormwood.
When we first started, we planted and used some of the wormwood here.
Are there worms in it?
No, it's not. No, and that's actually a story in its own.
Because that's tequila, right?
Well, certainly a mezcal, but and you can eat the worm too. But no,
they go good with vermouth. By the way, they pair nicely. Yeah,
I haven't done that one yet.
Okay,
but we have worms in all your vermouth.
Yeah.
No, Dave, no, you're getting me way off track here. But we have a cocktail we came up with that uses tequila and vermouth. So I mean, you could do almost anything with vermouth. What do you call such a thing? I think it was. It had something to do with Diablo in it, so I can't remember. Something about the devil.
Or maybe there's got to be a morning after.
Yeah, please.
Vermouth and tequila. Please, yeah, please. Sounds lovely. Okay.
In any case.
And I was digressing, right? Okay.
No, but it's all circular. It all comes back. The wormwood got its name because it was used as a medicinal plant to expel worms, back in the 1700s. And so that's where it derives.
Oh, so this is totally cool. So you eat the plant or parts of the plant.
Yeah.
If you had worms.
Yeah. It was supposed to dispel them and this and that.
Dispel. So. You mean like expel them?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's not get into that.
Yeah.
Okay. So
in any case, I tried it. It's extremely bitter. It's so bitter that I couldn't even use it in our vermouth. So be assured we do not have any wormwood in ours.
You know, the way you phrased that wasn't right. It was so bitter we couldn't even use it in our vermouth. No,
because I've used a number of herbs and botanicals that I source from all over the world.
Is that what they call bitter herbs?
They are bitter herbs.
What are bitters?
Bitters are, again, where they're using different herbs and botanicals that have bitter qualities to them, like quinine is a bittering agent.
And why do we want bitter herbs?
Because when you talk about vermouth, and we had talked about it a minute ago as being an aperitif, the whole idea of an aperitif is to stimulate your appetite. It's a pre-drink so that you have a very good, enjoyable meal because you've stimulated your appetite. Your salivary glands are starting to really kick in. And so a bittering agent tends to accentuate these characteristics. So you want to enjoy your meal.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Bitter. Mantequilla. Bitter. Mantequilla.
There it is.
Okay, anyway. All right. So
yeah.
I am learning so much here. This is honestly, this is stuff I didn't know.
Yeah, so
we only have like 30 seconds. You want to hold that thought?
I'm going to have to hold that one.
All right,
we're
going to definitely hold that thought. We're going to come back. We are sitting in the office of, you know what I'm saying? We're sitting in the office, the nerve center. There are two thrones in here, one for Andy Quadi and one for Michael, and it is where they oversee the operations, the very top secret, I might add. You know, Colonel Sanders, you got nothing on Quadi. Nothing, I tell you. How many herbs and spices are on your vermouth?
A number.
11?
A number.
More?
More.
More. Colonel Sanders is turning over in his grave right now going, hey, what pairs with Kentucky Fried Chicken? Makes sense. Via vermouth aperitif from the Quaddy Winery. We'll be back with Michael Blaylock from the Quaddy Winery here in Madera, California, and talk just a little bit more about vermouth. It's named after a wormwood. If you have worms, chew on a little bit of bark, and you'll be barking up a different tree. We'll be back with Grape Encounters right after this.
Your Grape Encounter with David Wilson will continue from our Central Coast Wine Country studio in the quaint, friendly, and historic town of Atascadero, California. Don't forget to join our Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page, where incredibly fun people just like you share ideas and frequently get together to share a bottle as well.
Hello, Mr. Wilson.
Wilson!
Welcome to the show.
Wilson!
Don't bother adjusting the knobs on your radio. It's a special transmission. Diary to your head.
And now, here's the guy who went from hipster to sipster, David Wilson.
No, 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 Mr. Wilson.
Wilson!
This isn't where you should be.
Gosh, I cannot believe how fast this hour is zooming by. That's what happens when you sit down with a genius like Michael Blaylock. He is the director of winemaking at Quaddy Winery. You know their wines, Essentia, Electra Moscato, Red Electra Moscato, Elysium Black Muscat, which is what I'm drinking right at the moment. And we didn't even talk about Deviation.
Yeah.
That's the one that's got rose geranium and Damiana.
Exactly. It's just two different herbs, but both of those herbs really have a wild sensation.
If your name is David or your name is Michael, you drink that wine, you're going to want to change your name to Randy. Okay. So there you go.
I love that one.
Hey, by the way, did you hear about the divorce between Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie?
Yes, yes, yes.
And they own Chateau Miravel.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Beautiful rosé wines made in Provence, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you hear that either they're going to sell the winery or they're only going to sell the wine in splits?
No, I had not heard that one. Very good.
Sorry, I just had to get that out there. I've been dying to throw that. It had no place in this entire show. Okay. All right, vermouth, we're talking.
We're kind of having fun.
Yeah, we're talking vermouth here today. Via is the vermouth you want to look for. I can tell you this is a handmade vermouth. You know what? If you don't drink spirits or you just don't want to get around that high alcohol, I know I don't like to.
Yeah.
Just drink it by itself. Enjoy it. It is so beautiful. You're not paying me anything for this, right?
No, this is just fun.
Would you consider paying me something for this?
No, this is just fun.
I don't like that. Good answer. But no, I think that we need to see more really fine vermouths being made.
Yeah.
In this sense, I think you guys are really pioneers.
I think so too.
It was big at one time, but it really fell from grace. It's funny because we were talking about the fact that you should treat vermouth like every other, you know, decent white wine, right?
Sure.
You can go to any of your friends, Michael's parents' house, okay? They got living parents. Go there. Go to where the refrigerator is or the stove is and that cabinet above the refrigerator especially, okay? Open it up.
Right.
Guaranteed, you're going to find a bottle of vermouth in there that is like at least as old as you are.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
At some point, your friend's parents are going to make a martini and they're going to pour that in there. And they're going to say this. They're going to go, no, I don't really like martinis as much as I used to.
Yeah. I wonder why.
What's in the vermouth? Talk herbs for a second because we have very little time and I'm wasting your time with my stupid jokes.
I mean, you kind of alluded to it that they are kind of secret. Every winery does have their own secrets.
No, I didn't allude to it. I asked you what,
how many, and you just punted the question.
Yeah,
exactly. So instead, it may be a better question, characteristics and everything else.
You're the first guest that's ever said a better question would be this.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. Tell me my better question, I'll ask it to you.
On the different herbs that I use, I think the best explanation on that would be that on the dry vermouth, I'm trying to use parts of the plant that are kind of new growth, things that make you think of spring. So all the types of herbs I used were things, a lot of flowers, a lot of leaves, some stems, but all the new, fresh growing parts of the plant. Now, we didn't talk really about the sweet
vermouth. Do you use any bunny rabbits in there? Because when I think spring, I think bunny rabbits.
No, I don't. This is all PETA approved. But we didn't talk about the sweet vermouth, but the sweet vermouth now is the parts of the plant and the different herbs that I use are all like the energy-saving parts of the plant. So where you think the energy is stored. So I use a lot of roots.
This is getting really metaphysical.
And I use a lot of bark, and I use seeds.
Wow.
So there's a reason why we came up with this recipe and the different herbs that we use and where we source them around the world and stuff. And so there's a lot of thought. It's handcrafted. It's a handcrafted product.
Michael, can I just ask one serious question of you?
Yes.
You're not going to tell me the herbs, right?
I'm not going to tell you the herbs. I can tell you a couple of them, but I'm not going to tell you.
Give me like three. Can I have three?
Yes, you may have three.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, on the dry, we use, like I said,
Stalling.
Yes, I am. No, we use a lot of flowers and leaves and things. Okay, so one of the flowers we use, of course, is rose petals. We use a lot of rose petals in it. We use linden flower.
You said of course, and I had no idea. Petals. Okay, all right.
We use linden flower. It's a beautiful flower, and some of the leaves, it's got a honey texture and quality. Okay. So we use that. One of the things I like, that fresh green growing thing, I use some alfalfa. Okay. People don't think of that.
All right, I'm going to let you stop there, because I know I'm pushing you.
That's all right.
At this point in time.
That's all right.
So you get the herbs from where? All over the country?
I source them all over the world.
All over the world.
Right, yeah. Yes.
A lot of them. How do you do that?
There are a number of purveyors of herbs that I'll contact, and I'll have them send me samples, and then we'll test them.
Does that blow your nose out? I mean,
it's amazing.
Seriously?
It's like, it's Christmas all year. I get a package from somewhere, you open it up, and it just explodes in the room.
So for people who want to become more familiar with your wines, I guess best bet is to send them to quadywinery.com, right?
Exactly.
It's Quady winery.com.
You got it. Exactly.
And when you go into a retailer, don't go in looking for Quady because you're probably not going to find that.
Yeah.
You're going to find the various products that they make.
Right.
So it's Essentia, Elysium, Electra.
The Red Electra, the Via Vermouth, the Deviation.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you will recognize these labels instantly.
Yeah.
These are, by the way, very modestly priced products, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Really super fair in terms of the pricing. But every last one of them, and I, by the way, have tasted every last one of these products at one point or another.
Today, no.
No, stop it. I've got a radio show to do here.
I'm sorry.
Every one of these products is absolutely delicious. And we were talking actually during the commercial break about something. I kind of want to end it on this thought. Yeah. Get the idea of sweet and dessert out of your head. Now, think about this for a second. I was just drinking the Elysium Black Muscat, right?
Right.
It's delicious. Try something like that. I have a sandwich that I love, which is turkey, the stuffing, a little mayo, and cranberries on just a nice white bread.
Yeah.
Then try that dessert wine against that. Think about fighting fire with fire. So you've got sweet. Put it against something that's got sweet. It'll bring both of them down, right?
I think you're talking about a synergy going on.
Yeah, a synergy.
Yeah.
Like they cancel each other out, and then they both become yummy and delicious
and meld together.
You said that the same moment I did.
Honest.
All right. Michael, what a pleasure. Oh, hey, by the way, Michael's doing a river cruise. I got to say this really super quick. A river cruise for wine lovers or maybe just lovers or whatever. You're doing this in July of next year, right?
Next year, that's correct.
Is there information on the website about that?
Yes, it is. Yep.
It's a river cruise. The Douro River.
Yeah.
The Douro River in Portugal. That's where is made.
The heart of the Portland.
And by the way, they also make at Quady a port-style wine, but it's called Starboard because that's how clever Michael is. Starboard and port, right?
That's it. Both Starboard sides of the port. Boat.
Nothing pairs better than that. Michael, what a pleasure.
Oh, David, it's been so much fun.
All right. That is going to do it for Grape Encounters this week. Do your homework. Go buy your vermouth. And, you know, say goodbye to vodka. Vermouth is cheaper. It's where all the taste comes from anyway. And check out all the Quady wines, quadywinery.com. And we will see you right here next week. Michael, you'll be listening?
Oh, yeah.
Well done!